knowledge are not the ones who come to claim it in public.
Let me add one point here about the tawakkul or trust in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Yeah.
Tawakkul means to Allah takhafa ma Allah ahada. To always remember him and to not to be fearful of anything or anybody while you're remembering Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So
very
it means
true.
That you should do your best, you should plan, you should have the best decision, but after all, rely on Allah for having the best fruit for that.
Jazakallah khair. Very beautiful, Sheikh. Thank you very much. Dear listeners, thank you for your staying tuned and listening to us from IRB English Radio. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Li Aliyin wa Husayn wa Hasan. Li Aliyin wa Husayn wa Hasan. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي وحسين وحسن.
Communicate.
Jean-Luc Brunel, a famous French model scout and fashion industry figure, has been found dead in his prison cell in what appears to be a suicide. Brunel was a close associate of infamous billionaire and sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein, who was also supposed to have hung himself in his cell. We've heard about Epstein and the sex trafficking and the victims who've come forward, but why has the media said nothing about the blackmailing aspect that Epstein and his close associate Ghislaine Maxwell were using underage girls to gather dirt on politicians so they could blackmail them? And what about the relationship to Israel's intelligence service, the Mossad? Today, we're going to try and answer these questions and look at the saga a little more carefully. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique. On Saturday, February 19th, 2022, Jean-Luc Brunel, a prominent French model scout, was found dead in his cell in La Santé prison in what has been called a suicide. Now you might be wondering, why should this be of any particular interest? Because Brunel was not just a big figure in the fashion industry, he was also a close associate of billionaire sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein. Brunel stands accused of sexual assault and having partaken in alleged sex trafficking ring run by Epstein. To be frank, he was providing young girls to Epstein for sex. And for lack of a better word, he was a pimp. Now, according to one of the victims, Virginia Gouffray, Epstein admitted to her that he had, quote, slept with over 1,000 of Brunel's girls. And it was from Virginia Gouffray's civil suit against Epstein's close associate, Ghislaine Maxwell, that we know of Brunel's name as well. And this is one day that we see these court documents unsealed, one day before Jeffrey Epstein's death. Now, Jeffrey Epstein was known for living a lavish life and always inviting very prominent figures like actors and high-level politicians and businessmen to fly around with him on his private jet. And so Jeffrey Epstein would go and invite these people to his private islands, right, where they would have intercourse with underage girls that he had trafficked through his associates such as Maxwell or Brunel, who were running these fashion and model agencies where they would get these girls from. And so following the revelations of this scandal, you know, people are starting to wonder, are these prominent figures, the politicians, the actors, all of these people we see in the photographs with Epstein, did they also participate in this sex trafficking ring? Because many of their names appear on the flight logs of Jeffrey Epstein's private jets. One of those names is, of course, Jean-Luc Brunel. The flight logs list him as a passenger 25 times on Epstein's private plane. And so who exactly was Jeffrey Epstein, the real Jeffrey Epstein? And why are there so many secrets surrounding this whole case? Now, back in 2008, Epstein pleaded guilty for soliciting a minor for prostitution. He served 13 months in jail. But unlike most prisoners who have to stay in prison, Epstein was given the luxury of being able to work out of his office 6 days a week. Now, one of the women who has come forward to accuse Epstein of sexual assault is Maria Farmer. When Maria Farmer was just a young art student, Epstein bought one of her paintings. She was recruited to work as his art advisor. And Farmer claims that Epstein showed her an entire system of secret video surveillance that he had set up inside his property with cameras in the bedrooms and the toilets. Now, Farmer was the first victim to officially report Epstein's behavior and abuse to the Federal Bureau of Investigations, the FBI. However, at the time, you know, the authorities just didn't seem to take her accusations seriously, and there was no investigation. When Ghislaine Maxwell found out that Farmer had paid a visit to the FBI, she began threatening her with physical violence.
What sort of threats has she made against you?
Originally, it started with things like, I'm going to burn your art, and then I'm going to burn your career, and then I'm going to burn you and the house you live in. And then it was, oh, be careful crossing a street. You know, you can get shot in the back of the head. You know, they were threats against my life, and I told the FBI this.
It wasn't just Maxwell, Brunel, and Epstein doing this. The victims have also accused many high-level officials, billionaires, professors, even the British royal family, Prince Andrew, of having partaken in this sex trafficking. Epstein provided them with young girls, which they abused. Now, earlier, I talked about the flight logs and how Brunel's name appears there. But you might be more familiar with former U.S. President Bill Clinton or Donald Trump, whose names appear multiple times on Jeffrey Epstein's flight logs. Now, Jeffrey Epstein was finally arrested on July 6, 2019, on federal charges for sex trafficking minors, and he pleaded not guilty. They then put Epstein in New York City's Metropolitan Correctional Center, also known as MCC, and they put him on suicide watch because he reportedly tried to take his own life. Now, when you're put under suicide watch, that means you're under 24/7 surveillance. But after an assessment by a high-level psychologist, Epstein was taken out of suicide watch, and they put him instead in a special housing unit, or an SHU. And so barely a month after his arrest, on August 10th at 6:30 a.m., Jeffrey Epstein is found dead in his cell by apparent suicide. And it turns out that the guards had fallen asleep and there's no camera footage. And with Brunel's suicide, the same thing. There's no camera footage. The cameras were not working. Now, look, there are many theories floating out there about Epstein's death, specifically because a lot of things don't add up. And even then, Attorney General William Barr, he himself admitted to some, quote, serious irregularities.
I was appalled, and indeed the whole department was, and frankly, angry, to learn of the MCC's failure to adequately secure this prisoner. We are now learning of serious irregularities at this facility that are deeply concerning and demand a thorough investigation.
There are also numerous suicide prevention experts who also expressed serious concern. Senior staff counsel with the National Prison Project of the American Civil Liberties Union, Eric Balaban, raised questions as to why Epstein's life was risked by putting him in this restrictive special housing unit, or SHU, specifically when he had shown suicidal tendencies. According to him, an SHU is just not an appropriate thing for someone who's shown recent suicidal tendencies. Now, I can recall as I was attending the extradition hearing of Julian Assange, one of the people testifying was none other than Maureen Baird. Maureen Baird is the former warden of that very prison, MCC, where Jeffrey Epstein killed himself. And she spoke about the prison conditions there, specifically about pretrial SAMs. However, she did note one thing, that Jeffrey Epstein was the first person to kill themselves at MCC since 2013. Now, to be honest, I cannot know how, you know, for sure how Jeffrey Epstein died, whether he simply decided to end his life because of all the pressure from the trial and the public exposure and the lengthy sentence awaiting him, or whether he was killed because he was too dangerous and the elites wanted to tie up some loose ends. But let me tell you something that we can verify. This wasn't the first time Jeffrey Epstein was in jail. As we were saying earlier, he was arrested in 2007. But how come he got off so easily? Well, it turns out that Alexander Acosta was the Miami Attorney General at the time. And while he was being interviewed a couple of years later for the position of Labor Secretary by Donald Trump's transition team, Acosta revealed that, quote, "I was told Epstein belonged to intelligence and to leave it alone." And now you see why he cut Jeffrey Epstein a non-prosecution plea deal. If all of this wasn't enough, you know, all of this horrible sex trafficking, it also seems that Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell and Jean-Luc Brunel had ties to at least Israeli intelligence, if not also American intelligence. You know, Epstein had been known to brag about working for the Mossad. And Acosta just gives him a slap on the wrist because he knows that he's working with intelligence. Now, Epstein's longtime partner, Ghislaine Maxwell, her father, Robert Maxwell, is known to have been both a KGB and Mossad agent. You see, Robert Maxwell was a very, very famous media tycoon who owned 6 national newspapers in the UK. He also famously stole around £500 million from his own workers' pension funds. Now, journalist Whitney Webb, who's done fantastic work on Epstein, she's written extensively about Robert Maxwell's exploits as a Mossad agent in great detail. At one point, for example, Robert Maxwell acquired a company called Information on Demand, which was a front, it was a cutout for the Mossad. And they sold an Israeli piece of software called Promise, right? And this software was sold to governments around the world. And it had a back door inside it, allowing the Israelis to penetrate and spy on the very clients they had sold it to. So Robert Maxwell even sold Promise, this software, to a Los Angeles-based firm called Sandia National Laboratories, which provided Israeli intelligence with direct access to the core of the U.S. nuclear weapons program and nuclear weapons technology. And speaking of nuclear technology, it's also believed that Robert Maxwell is the one who tipped off the Israeli embassy in London about the Israeli nuclear scientist Mordechai Vanunu, after Vanunu had divulged the existence of Israel's nuclear program to the press, right? Vanunu was subsequently kidnapped in Rome. They flew him to Israel and then sentenced him to almost 2 decades in prison. And when the issue of Robert Maxwell being a Mossad spy was brought up, because you have to keep in mind, he was also a member of parliament in the UK. So this was quite the scandal. And when this was brought up, no one would print it because the press feared being hit with a libel suit, right? So instead, what happened is George Galloway and Rupert Allison, who were both MPs at the time, they went and raised this issue in the House of Commons, exposing Robert Maxwell as a Mossad spy. And by extension, this allowed the British press to start printing about it without fear of reprisal or fear of being sued by Maxwell and his lawyers. And just a few weeks later, mysteriously, Maxwell died after allegedly falling off of his yacht. He was buried with full honors at the Mount of Olives. And you know who attended his funeral? The Israeli Prime Minister and President and at least 6 former and serving heads of the Mossad. Maybe that will give you an idea about how important he was for the Israelis, that all of these figures are attending his funeral. And so that's Ghislaine Maxwell's father, right? But if you thought the only connection here to the Mossad was her father, Well, you better think again. Journalist Jeff Shalev conducted an interview in 2019 with an individual named Ari Ben Menashe. Ben Menashe was a, quote, Israeli consultant and former arms dealer who also served as a senior executive for Israel's Directorate of Military Intelligence from 1977 to 1987. So this puts Ben Menashe in a unique position to divulge about Epstein and also Maxwell, because he met them both 40 years ago when he was working for Israel alongside Maxwell's father, Robert Maxwell. And so in this interview, Ben Menashe is asked, quote, "You spoke about Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell as being part of Israeli military intelligence. Do you know specifically which unit?" Ben Menashe replies that, quote, "Because of Robert Maxwell, they worked directly with military intelligence. I don't know who they answered to." The interviewer then continues, "Would you say that she was an agent as well and in military intelligence as well?" Ben Menashe says yes, yes to both. And so Ben Menashe also makes another thing very clear, that Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell, the entire point of their sex trafficking operation was to, quote, "blackmail American and other political figures by specifically seeking out underage girls for their friends." And as for Jean-Luc Brunel, he used his modeling agency to traffic girls to Epstein, right? And unsurprisingly, he had an office in where? Tel Aviv, right? An office in Tel Aviv as part of his modeling agency with Epstein. And so here in this picture, you can see Brunel wearing a cap that reads Israel Army. Again, that's perhaps not the most incriminating thing, but do keep it in mind. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this short break.
Communique is a program in which Richard Medhurst, the independent journalist and political commentator, gives his views of controversial issues of our time and interviews famous politicians and personalities. This program is broadcast every Sunday by IRIB English Radio.
Joining me is Graham Elwood. He's an American comedian, podcaster, and writer. He hosts a progressive YouTube show and podcast called The Political Vigilante. He's also the co-host of Government Secrets with Lee Camp. Graham has been covering the Jeffrey Epstein saga for several years now, which even resulted in his YouTube channel being demonetized. Graham, could you maybe just to start off give us a very brief overview of the Epstein case in the simplest terms so anyone can get it?
I have a whole Epstein playlist on my YouTube channel, and one of the most critical interviews I would ask people to watch is where I interview a former child crimes investigator, my friend Eric Oldenburg, who was on the Phoenix Police Department for 24 years, and he investigated online basically child trafficking and child pornography and pretty gnarly stuff. And I mean, he said, you know, anyone can be a pedophile, any socioeconomic status, any ethnicity, any gender, any sexual orientation. Sexual orientation doesn't even necessarily correlate. He said, but the people that can get away with it the most are the wealthy and most powerful. And that's what the Epstein case is. If you want to understand how the ruling elites operate, start paying attention to the Epstein case, because you've got in the intelligence community, specifically CIA and Mossad, their handprints are all over this. And, you know, like, with these examples, just some basic stuff. So when Epstein was arrested in West Palm Beach, Florida in 2008, 2009 in that area, Acosta was the prosecutor, and he was told to that Epstein was a CIA asset and to back off, and that's why he gave him a very lenient case, a charge, basically. He got the got to leave his prison every day and fly around and literally traffic and abuse girls.
And when you mention powerful people and the ruling elites, you know, you have a lot of pictures, photographs of celebrities and very rich and important personalities that have photographed with Epstein or Maxwell. And we've also heard of this black book full of names. Could you basically tell us what that is and why we see so many important people photographed with Epstein and people related, people in his entourage?
One of the things, and this has been confirmed in other places, one of the things Epstein would do, he'd have these parties with the wealthiest, most powerful people in the world. Billionaires, politicians, I mean, presidents, several different royal families, including the Saudis and the British royal family. And so this powerful person would come in. One of Epstein's butlers would say, hey, would you like a massage from a beautiful young woman? The guy would say yes. And it would be, they'd have sex and it would be a child. And they'd videotape it. Then Epstein would say, well, now I've got evidence of you having sex with a child. And they would then invest in Epstein's, he had some like fake hedge fund. So this is one of the ways Epstein got power. And this is why the intelligence community went, oh, this is an asset, because now we can use these videotapes as leverage. So what is so significant here, Richard, is when Epstein was arrested in July of 2019, we saw the video and the footage of the guys in the FBI coats dragging out, you know, not dragging, but like wheeling out on dolly trucks, boxes of photos, videos, hard drives, all this stuff. None of it. We have seen any of it. So what we have seen is just these little snippets. We've seen like the photos you've seen online. We've seen the flight logs. And I think the flight logs are very critical as well. They show stuff like Bill Clinton on his plane 26 times, Hillary on his plane two times. Trump was originally thought to only be on one time, but more flight logs were released at the end of December during the Maxwell trial, showing Trump was actually on five times. So to your question here, where is that information? Well, that is the reason why this stuff is getting swept under the rug, because the richest, most powerful people are on video. So that's why Jean-Luc Brunel is dead, is because he probably wouldn't play ball or had information or threatened to make a deal with the prosecutor saying, I'll give you these videotapes, give me a lighter sentence. And then all of a sudden, oh, wow, he's so distraught, he's going to hang himself. It's believed that Maxwell has so much information, and she's ruthless. She plays hardball, that she has, you know, I don't know, some people will call it like whatever you are, like a kill switch, basically. My belief is, Ghislaine Maxwell said, if I go down, you
sorry
go
to cut
down.
You off. I was going to ask you about the Maxwell trial, about Ghislaine Maxwell. I mean, how does she tie into Epstein? What's the relationship, and why is she so important to this case? And what did you make of the trial that took place a few months ago?
We'll call her socialite, Epstein's gal pal, maybe even a recruiter. But according to several Epstein victims, including Virginia Roberts Giuffre and Maria Farmer and Maria Farmer's sister, Annie Farmer, she participated. So she's a pedophile. Like, let's be real clear here. And the media will not call Ghislaine Maxwell a pedophile. She is a pedophile and a sex trafficker. And all the women that survived said Maxwell treated them horribly. She treated them like trash.
Well, I mean, speaking of these political connections, one thing that I was really interested in asking you is that, you know, the connections to the Mossad, because you mentioned it briefly at the beginning. If I recall correctly, Brunel, he had one of these modeling agency offices in Tel Aviv, right? And we've heard many times that Maxwell is connected to the Mossad. Could you explain what that connection is and how this relates to the intelligence, specifically U.S. and Israeli?
Maxwell's father was a Mossad agent, and he had a mysterious death, jumped off a boat or some very sort of odd, mysterious death. So you have that. Then you have, as I stated earlier, Acosta said at an interview in 2009 that he was told to go easy on the prosecution of Epstein in Florida because he was this is Acosta's words, not mine, a quote CIA asset. Right. And then you have, again, John Kiriakou said this in my interview with him, and I asked him about the CIA. I said, does the CIA condone getting children for pedophiles? He goes, no, but if you went, I'm going to get a child for this pedophile because if I get him children, then we can leverage that and use him as an asset. The CIA would go, okay, because they just want the leverage and the intel. And then seeing how, again, going back to Epstein's like fake hedge fund, these guys would donate money to it. And I'm blanking on the names. There was another big hedge fund guy. I can't keep track of all their names, but he donated or invested a lot of money with Epstein. And then women have spoken out against him. So what intelligence is doing, they needed people like Epstein to help them get leverage on all of these people. And they were like, look, Epstein, we'll let him have, you know, do whatever he wants on his plane and on his island, as long as he keeps feeding us intel. Until he kept getting, I think Epstein was one of these guys that was so egregious with it that then he became a problem and they got rid of him. From the intelligence standpoint, if they've got video of somebody or some evidence, then that person's easy to control. If that person is found guilty and goes to prison, they don't have them. They don't have, that person has no more power. They have no more leverage. So they need these key people to get all this stuff done. And they've got, you know, leverage on, you know, the Saudi royal family. They've got, and, you know, as I said, John Kiriakou said, this feels like the Israelis. He felt like Mossad, his first gut instinct as a former CIA operative was that Mossad was involved in Epstein's death. This all feels very coordinated and maneuvered by those two intelligence agencies.
There is one really important aspect, though, that the victims themselves have underscored, which is that Jeffrey Epstein used these girls to blackmail powerful people. And so, yes, Epstein and Ghislaine are very obviously depraved individuals who preyed on others. But they also did this to get dirt on the wealthy, on politicians, on businessmen, and anyone that mattered. And they did this in service of Israeli intelligence. They did this at the behest of the Mossad. And again, that's not only speculation. This is now confirmed. It's on the record, confirmed by former Israeli intelligence officials, as we were just going through. And so in addition to all of the already vile, deplorable sexual assaults that this entire saga is mired with, we can see now that there is very clearly a political dimension to it as well. And the fact that the media won't talk about this and never tackle this angle, it really speaks volumes, right? Why do they refuse to talk about this? And how come, despite unsealing so many documents, the courts still continue to keep many of them under wraps? What are they hiding from us exactly? And what could be the other dark secrets in the spy world that we're yet to discover? Thanks for tuning in. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
There is no denying of the fact that the organized killers of peaceful Muslims are not Muslims, and there are no second thoughts on meting out justice to such godless elements who have no faith in any religion or school of thought, says Kayhan International staff writer in an article published under the heading Godless Elements Creating Sedition in Pakistan. Stay tuned for more. We are in the blessed month of Sha'ban, when the gates of paradise are flung open to the believers who adhere to the dynamic teachings of the Messenger of Mercy, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, and the humanitarian values expounded by his immaculate Ahlul Bayt, while the flames of hell leap to drag into the fiery bowels of the enemies of humanity, including the godless hypocrites who pose as Muslims to wantonly shed innocent Muslim blood. In a famous hadith recorded by both Sunni and Shia Muslims, the Prophet of Peace said, "When the first day of Sha'ban arrives, Satan spreads out his troops throughout the corners of the earth and its horizons, telling them to try to attract some of God's servants toward themselves. Indeed, God Almighty and Glorious also scatters his angels throughout the earth's quarters and horizons, telling them, 'Guide my servants and show them the right way,' whereat all of them will attain felicity through you, except such of them who refuse and are arrogant and rebellious. These join the party of Satan and enter his host." On March 4th, in the city of Peshawar in Pakistan, the hordes of Satan raised their ugly head to trigger bomb blasts at a mosque during the weekly Friday prayer, martyring scores of worshippers. The deadly terrorist attack also ended the miserable life of some of these godless perpetrators who might have been blown through remote control. If we discount the reports that they staged a suicidal attack by assaulting two police guards to enter the mosque and detonate explosive belts. Either way, these devils in human form, who are the avowed enemies of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, and his immaculate, and masquerade as Muslims, to kill and cause sedition amongst Muslims, chose to plunge into the eternal inferno, while the worshippers who lost their life in prayer in the Kuchari Saladar Mosque are definitely enjoying the bliss of paradise, leaving behind in the world grieving parents, widows, and orphans. As we go to the press, over 70 innocent souls have so far lost their life and over 200 others injured. But the questions persist. Why proper security measures are not taken by authorities? And why does the government of Pakistan hesitate from arresting and exterminating these un-Islamic outfits who, as is crystal clear, despite their use Muslim names, have no connection to Islam? Iran's foreign ministry spokesman urged the Pakistani government and security officials to adopt necessary strategies and take serious measures to prevent criminal activities of terrorists. Saeed Khatibzadeh said the Peshawar terrorist attack was aimed at creating sectarian divisions and is definitely against the unity of the Ummah. It is obvious from videos and photos circulating online, with ambulances rushing through congested narrow streets and ferrying the wounded to hospitals, and the senior officials, right from the president and the prime minister of the country, offering condolences to the bereaved family members, that the authorities are sparing no efforts in their duties to the victimized citizens. Yet the question arises, What is the solution to these recurring bouts of terrorism? Why Pakistan's blasphemy laws are not applied to these terrorist outfits on the payroll of the CIA and the Zionist splinter Muslim ranks? There is no denying of the fact that the organized killers of peaceful Muslims are not Muslims, and there are no second thoughts on meting out justice to such godless elements who have no faith in any religion or school of thought. The Islamic Republic of Iran, as part of its friendly and fraternal policy towards Pakistan, is willing to cooperate in efforts to track down these criminal hordes of Satan in order to protect Muslims from harm, sedition, and disunity. Let us recall another passage from the famous hadith of the Prophet of Islam on doing good and abstaining from evil that was mentioned before. On the advent of the first of Sha'ban, God Almighty and Glorious commands the gates of paradise to open, and He commands the tree of Tuba, whereat it spreads its branches all over the world. Thereat, a herald of our Lord, Almighty and Glorious, calls out, O servants of God, these are the branches of the tree of Tuba. So catch hold of them so that they may lift you up toward paradise. And those are the branches of the tree of Zakum. Beware of them. Let them not draw you toward hell. The Prophet of Allah said, By him who sent me as a prophet with the truth, whoever approaches one of the doors of goodness and piety on this day adheres to a branch of the tree of Tuba, and is taken toward paradise. And whoever approaches one of the doors of evil on this day is stuck to a branch of the Zakum tree, which draws him toward hell.
Start. Movement. Speed. Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islam my deen. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners, sisters and brothers, ladies and gentlemen from all around the world, welcome to another episode of Youth Station.
And today we'll discuss once again some interesting topics.
Yes. I'm very happy to meet you here, Zainab. It's such a pleasure to be with you.
My pleasure to be with you always,
yes.
Asma.
It's such a happiness to be here with you.
So what are we discussing, Asma?
Social media.
Social media.
And how it has changed us. Do you use Telegram, Instagram a lot?
I must say not a lot, but I do use.
I would say a lot. Because
because they are designed to get you addicted.
Yes, because, you know, as we're living in a modern age, we do not have access to all our families. Some of them are abroad and we have to talk to them every now and then.
Like me, yeah.
So you see,
my parents are in
Kashmir. We have to stay in contact. That's why sometimes we have to use them a lot.
But sometimes you use them a lot because of the fear of missing out.
Yes.
I personally use one of the apps a lot because I have fear of missing out some important messages, some this, some status stories.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think this one of the fears of missing out things is one of the reasons that makes you get addicted.
Zainab, I will tell you something, some personal thing.
Sure.
Well, in past, maybe I had more time to read extra books, you know?
Of course, we had.
But now, when as soon as I take my phone in my hands, then time passes like I'm not aware of it. You know, this virtual world.
Yeah.
This virtual world is just taking us into it. We are like diving in it without knowing. Unconsciously, we're getting immensely synced in this world, right?
Yeah.
In past, we did have more time for doing some extra activities, like reading books, like going for the things we love to do, like, I don't know.
Enjoying nature?
Yes, enjoying nature. I used to do some paintings, but nowadays, I do not have that time.
Yeah, because your time is completely taken by the screen.
Yes.
There's actually a wave from, like, people started from agriculture, and then there was a wave from the agricultural wave. The wave came to some, you know, some physical hard work again. And then these economical waves changed to a digital wave.
Exactly.
And this digital wave has not only been essential for the just for the economic
welfare.
But
I envy people from past generations. I envy them a lot. Because I think they were living a happier life.
But I think we as a generation have enjoyed both, you know. I think we have lived a life when there was no WhatsApp, no Telegram, no Instagram. Mm-hmm. And we are living in an age when we're addicted
suddenly
to these apps.
Suddenly everything changed so much.
Yeah.
In
so
a rapid
fast.
Pace.
And these apps have got tremendous potential to increase your knowledge. But at the same time, you get addicted.
Yes.
I think it's completely a user-dependent policy.
Yes.
How a user uses it.
In a rapid pace, everything has been changed. And as you said, it depends on our priority and plannings. But sometimes it just
since it's designed
away.
In an addictive way, you cannot control sometimes. So
yes.
Not sometimes, but most of the time.
Most of the time.
For example, if two people are married and one of them is just stuck on the phone, the other thinks that he's not giving me importance anymore. Or when I think parent-child relationship has been, you know, disturbed.
Exactly. In past, we had much of time
to spend with your parents, to talk
with
them.
My mom, to talk with her.
Yeah.
Now since see our parents, our siblings, but nowadays, no, unfortunately.
Stay tuned to IRIB English Radio.
Yes.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Now let's see the other part of the story.
Yeah,
what
sure.
about living without them?
Oh, wow.
Say bye to all
of
them.
I miss living without them. I miss the time when there was no WhatsApp,
yes.
but the emotions
but
were
saying.
But can
we do it right now? Can we do it nowadays? I think it's impossible.
Yeah, it's completely, I guess,
When you travel for a week or two and you do not have access to internet and there is no connection to net, then you
feel like you have gone 20 years back. I have had
You're
this experience
out of universe.
No, see, I have had this experience since I'm from Kashmir. Mm-hmm. Our internet was blocked for, I guess, 3 months.
Oh my God, that's such a long time.
And not only internet, Asma, just believe our mobile signals were taken away.
Oh,
we were not
good.
Able to contact each other. So we never knew what is going around, what is going
on. You feel like you're not living in this world anymore.
We just felt like we have gone not just 10 years, 20 years back. We felt like we have gone a century back.
Exactly.
That was
That's
the impact.
So difficult.
But you know what was the best part of the story? You know, nowadays you're going to your relative's place and you're first contacting them. I am coming in some half an hour or so.
Yes.
And they make their efforts to clean the house, to get...
To be perfect.
To be perfect. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That, like, be that masked kind of people.
Exactly.
Yeah, so
put the mask on in order to be ready to have
attractions. And they get into that
trouble,
you know. Now they have to spend money to get to cook for you what you like and what you do not. And then you should not say that, oh my God, see, I went there and they did not give me chicken or meat or something. They gave me something, I don't know, say lentils or something else. But we went to relative's house in around.
And perhaps neighbors came to each
other. And I tell you what, Asma, we forced them to just pick out, because the people used to had a small garden kind of thing. They used to, you know, cultivate things over there.
Yes.
We forced them to drag out them and cook that, and we eat that.
It's such
and
a nice experience.
It was so nice. And then they like the fact, no, we can live in a world which is without fakeness.
You
which
got
is
closer
so real.
To each other,
we
right?
We got very closer to
yes,
each other. We
yes,
got to know
it's
each other. We got to understand each other, you know? And I think that way we spent more time with relatives, more time with families than on this internet stuff.
Yes,
we had a lot of problems. I mean, we were not able to contact here. We had so many problems. I mean, our half family was here, half family was there.
Yes.
They never knew what happened to us where we are. We could not
contact.
It's
very difficult.
If someone died, if someone was being hospitalized, you never were able to like contact each other. But this time taught us a lot how to be connected to each other without internet.
Yes.
Without even mobile phones. So like we went to each other's places without just informing them.
Yeah.
And however, it was the worst part was like if someone died, we were not able to inform.
In these aspects, it's really sad and awful.
Yeah.
It like we cannot leave without net or, I don't know, the signals of our cell phones. That
yes.
could do a
so
lot
we are,
of help
we are
to
dependent
us.
In a lot of ways, but...
But as you said, it would learn us how to be independent.
Exactly.
Living without these things, though there's no denying that they are very important in our lives.
Exactly. You know, you have to imagine life without internet, without the social media, and without this digital life. And you have to point out what are the best things in the life without digital life.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have to point out best things, what are the best things in a digital life. Pick bests
from both sides.
Yeah, and work on only best, not work on the worst parts, you know. Never make yourself get addicted. The more you get addicted, you're breaking your relations within your home, under one roof.
Mm-hmm.
You're not...
noticing other people in your room.
You're not noticing each other. You're not noticing, I mean, you're not noticing the grays in the hairs of your mother.
Exactly. That's the thing I always say to myself. When we are detached from our digital world,
yeah.
we could notice some very small things that happen to us without even us noticing them.
Exactly.
Like just what you said, my mother is getting older, my father is really getting old, my siblings are growing without me
and you even
noticing.
Not, and you notice the grays in the beard of your husband or your father.
Exactly.
We have become so much, I think, more than the addicted we were supposed to get.
Yes.
Because they are designed that way. And I wonder when the metaverse kind of thing will come. What will happen?
You remember we talked about that? The metaverse, I told you at that time, it's going to be scary and at the very same time so interesting.
Exactly.
It's scary because now we don't have metaverse and we are this much immersed
addictive.
In it. Now imagine what happens if
when
there is a virtual world in which we could... go and travel through it and
experience things.
Experience millions of new things.
We need to pick up goods of all ages.
Yes, and planning. I always say that in life, priority does matter.
Exactly. And you know, some people say, I don't have time, I'm busy. I read this quote somewhere, this was so beautiful. There was that, no one is busy in this world, it's all about priorities.
Exactly. It's all about priority. I was talking to my friend and I told her, I'm busy, though I cannot do anything. You know?
Yeah, it's all about priorities.
It's a contrast, which is so, so sad to say it. That's all we have got to talk about.
two lives, mm-hmm. with internet and without internet, with cell phones and without cell phones.
Sometimes give ourselves some space. Go a week without technology and see what happens to your
life. What happens to you? Yes. Really, you'll be a different person.
Yeah,
that's also a very good idea. Like live a week without
Live another life, see what happens.
The way youth especially are addicted to this digital world, mm-hmm. This time it will be very easy to go without this for a week. We can try DIYs. Step by step.
Dear youth, life is just passing. We have to give ourselves some space. We have to think more.
Exactly.
I'm one of the people who have been addicted to this world, but I do really feel sometimes that I have to give it a cut and then go back to it.
You do feel the worst that I mentioned in the lens of without any doubt, a human being is in loss because the time is passing. And interestingly, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala swears about time in this surah.
Exactly.
Well, asr. The time is passing, the time is flying.
Which is terrifying. Time passes and suddenly you're 30. Suddenly you're 40.
And you're in loss. You're in loss. Allah swears that you're in loss.
So take care of your time.
Yeah, take care of it.
Because it's passing. And once it's gone forever.
So have a look at the grace of your mom.
Yes, notice every little thing. Now spring is coming. Notice the little blossoms in the tree.
Wow.
And the beautiful
flowers.
Notice the
flowers. Nature. Notice the sound of the waterfalls around you.
Yes,
notice the sounds of the birds.
And leave your phone at home.
Yeah.
And try to think. Breathe.
Yeah.
Breathe the life.
Breathing as well. I would like to close with that. There's this Persian couplet. I love it. It says... I would want you to translate one by one.
Yes, sometimes give your days a rest.
Rangi,
let it breathe. Let your days breathe.
Let your time breathe. No, rangi bi ayne mat bede.
Yes, the blurry mirror has to be colorful.
You just clean it up so that it shows you a very clear picture of yours. Mi danam ki sarat shulugh ast.
I know that you're very busy. Sometimes give yourself a time for a visit.
Yeah, give a visit.
Visit yourself, yes.
Visit yourself.
There's another poem that says, I miss myself.
I miss myself, I really do.
Don't miss yourself. Stay with yourself and spend some time with yourself. It's very interesting.
Yeah. Give yourself a visit. Give yourself a time.
Go for a visit with yourself. It's going to be so interesting. So again, time's flying so fast and it was such an amazing time.
Same here, Asma. Same here, dear listeners.
Yes, this was IRB English Radio.
And you were listening to the Youth Station.
Yes, thank you for listening. From me and from Zainab, we both bid you farewell.
Wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullah.
Wa barakatuhu.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 41 meters, 7300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iransat or BAT 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is pastorday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.